This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, we're continuing our post-budget coverage by looking at Budget 2022 through the lens of Keluarga Malaysia and sustainability. So first of all, how people-focused was Budget 2022? What initiatives particularly stood out? We're going to explore that. And then in the second half of the show, we look at whether it sets us on the path towards sustainability. As always, we want to know, what did you make of Budget 2022? Was it actually helpful for you? Call us 7733-29. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08. Let's dive right in. So as you, I'm sure, are aware, Finance Minister Datuk Sri Tengku Zafrul Tengku Abdul Aziz unveiled Budget 2022 on Friday. And the theme for it is Keluarga Malaysia Makmur Sejahtera. And it's that first part, actually, that we want to focus on quite a bit today. But just to say, it is anchored on three pillars: strengthening recovery, building resilience, driving reforms. And there was a total allocation of 332.1 billion ringgit. So looking at the theme itself, right, and the focus that it had on Keluarga Malaysia, some of the things within the budget that address that included Bantuan Keluarga Malaysia, which will provide aid amounting to 2,000 ringgit for households with a monthly income below 2,500 with three or more children. There's also going to be an additional 500 ringgit given to single mothers or fathers with dependents and a monthly income of 5,000. 300 ringgit for families with senior citizens. That's an additional amount. And this is expected to help 9.6 million households with an allocation of 8.2 billion ringgit. As always, there were some race-based allocations, 11.4 billion ringgit allocated for Bumiputra empowerment-related policies, including 6.6 billion for the educational facilities of Bumiputra students, 4.8 billion for various capacity building and business financing programs, under a variety of bodies, 200 million for the participation of Bumiputra youths in small-scale government procurement programs, procurement projects, and 1.5 billion for the management and development of Islamic affairs, which sits under the Prime Minister's department. There are others, but moving on, 200 million was allocated for the Chinese community, aiming to implement home improvement programs, new village development, and also access to financing for new villages, SME entrepreneur financing scheme. And then 145 million was allocated to the Indian community to implement programs to empower the socio-economic health of the community under the Indian Community Transformation Unit, among others. So that is the focus on Keluarga Malaysia. And I think that there's a lot to discuss there, not least of which is two things, right? How much social protection does this actually offer the people? The classic question here of the budget, which is whether or not it's actually going to effectively and efficiently reach the people that it is targeting. And the other aspect, of course, is the one that I just ran through, trying very hard not to inundate you with numbers. Not sure if I succeeded, but race-based allocations, which we see every year and always raises the question of when we talk about race-based allocations, does that specificity help or harm, right? When we're talking about trying to get allocations to members of, for example, the B40 or the B60 community, is looking at it through the lens of race actually the most helpful? When we're talking about developing the country and having everybody come up together, again, whether that's the most helpful? These are some of the questions that we're going to be trying to answer in the first half of our show. So we will be doing that, just to say that the second half is going to be focused on sustainability. But yes, for now though, Keluarga Malaysia, right in focus. We want to hear from you. What did you make of Budget 2022? Was it helpful for you? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Farah Rosli, Malaysia tax market leader at Ernst & Young. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
stay tuned to BFM's Budget 2022 special, brought to you by Ma Sing.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
It is 6:14 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. Today, of course, we are continuing our coverage of Budget 2022, looking at it specifically through the lens of Keluarga Malaysia first and then later on sustainability. But before we get to our guest, wanted to hear from you. What did you make of Budget 2022? Does it live up to the theme of Keluarga Malaysia, in your opinion? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, speaking to us on this point today is Farah Rosli, Malaysia Tax Market Leader at Ernst & Young Tax Consultants. Farah, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for having me.
So, let's start with your overall impressions of the budget, especially in terms of its more people-focused measures. What did you think?
Yeah, Lynn, you mentioned earlier, that this budget focuses on three key pillars, strengthening recovery, building resilience, and driving reforms. And it's also guided by the 12th Malaysia Plan. And it sets, in my view, it sets the economic compass for Malaysia's recovery. We're all talking about recovery, and we can't wait for recovery to be over and things will go back to normal and the economy continue to bounce and the country and the people become stronger again. And also as Malaysia transitions to the endemic phase, Budget 2020 proposed a balanced set of measures to ensure then that the people are also being taken care of. And you're absolutely right. There is the allocation on the Bantuan Keluarga Malaysia. And I see that this is to help people to support themselves, especially during this challenging time. People who've lost their job, people who are, are short of opportunity to continue with their education, say, for example, and this will allow them to support saving lives and livelihood. And we also see then that the highest allocation was actually given to the Ministry of Education. And we know then that, and this is about 16% of the total allocation. And this shows how important skills, resources, talent of the future is for the country. But most importantly is how do we have the right emphasis and governance being put in place for implementation of any of those initiatives that have been put in place based on the allocation. And the other one, of course, we know is the second highest allocation, which is for health. And that is granted because, we look at people currently and the situation with us having a pandemic and now endemic that continues, that has to be going from strength to strength, and that shows in that without good health infrastructure, economic recovery will be a challenge.
So as we've been saying, the theme of Keluarga Malaysia was heavily referenced in this budget. It's even right there in the title, so to speak. And the most prominent is Bantuan Keluarga Malaysia, BKM. What stood out in this initiative?
In line with Keluarga Malaysia's spirit, Budget 2020 ensures that no person or no one or no business is being left out or neglected. And that's the intention of the economy. And as I've said, the focus on education, healthcare, and you did mention, Lynn, sustainability, and that's very important. It cannot be short-term. It must be sustainable for the future. And there's also an element of diversity, as well as SMEs and B40, the focus on B40 group, is commendable. And we all know that education is key to our future. I know I've been saying this many times. Education is not just the formal education that we have in the schools, in colleges, in universities, but it's also skills. Skills that's required by the industry, by the businesses. Businesses will require new skills and new talents, and we want to make sure then that as a country, our resources will be able to accommodate that. The focus on rakyat's well-being, and I mentioned restoring lives and livelihood. And Malaysia has shown a resilience during the pandemic. And we hope then that the budget proposals will allow us to remain competitive as well as going towards an exporting nation. Maybe there's a bit of a lack in terms of foreign direct investments focus, You're right. There was a focus on Bantuan Keluarga Malaysia. We hope that the implementation of the I'm a tax person, so I can't help talking about tax revenue raising measures that was introduced. If that will be balanced against Malaysia's attractiveness as investment destination, because if we do have the right industry in the country and we are able to actually provide the right jobs to our people, that will naturally support the lives and livelihood of our people. And what I would like to say is that the focus in Keluarga Malaysia, one of the elements is also in terms of creation of jobs for and employment for people, and that's again to reduce the unemployment rate to the 4% that was mentioned. Yeah.
So I did also want to touch on the emphasis still being on one-off cash handouts. What do you make of that? Firstly, but also of the criticism that this type of cash aid only provides short-term relief?
Good question, Lynn. In my view, the cash aid is to support the recovery of the people impacted. Yep. It may be short-term relief, but it does give, for lack of a better word, maybe the motivation, the right motivation and the right spirit, especially when we talk about mental well-being, mental health, and people are impacted by the pandemic and the loss of income. The one-off cash handout will, in a way, give a little bit of relief and it will help people get back to their feet and build a good support. But yes, you are right. A long-term sustainable plan needs to also be in place and not just for the short term. And that's why I was talking about having the right skills, the right talent, building back businesses. And businesses will be the ones that will be employing people. And there was also emphasis on SMEs, because we know SMEs do employ people, and when the business is strong, it would also give more employment and opportunity to the people. So that's a natural chain reaction, I would say. And there were also included, support for senior citizens who didn't have enough savings and not able to generate income due to the lockdown situation, and that was included as well, which is well-rounded, I would say. And you did mention, Lynn, channel assistance of RM2,000 to a household earning less than RM2,500 per month. And this also covers single parents as well as additional single mother, single parents. They are also eligible to receive Bantuan Keluarga Malaysia of up to RM2,500. Again, I would like to say it's important to have skills and talent, right? It's like people say you give a man a fish and he live for a day, but you give the person a rod or the right talent, the person will be able to survive for the longer term. And I would think that greater plan to enable the people to sustain the living with the right education, right skills is very important. It should be sustainable in the long run. In some ideas, perhaps having centres for specialised training on skills needed for industries. And we need to be advanced. We need to predict what is needed by the industries in the future. We all talk about Industry 4.0, but are we ready for Industry 4.0? Which part of IR 4.0 is required by industries? Having that cascaded down in terms of skills and training to the people. And that is akin to the rod that we're giving to our people so that they will continue to be able to sustain their living. And the employment opportunity and meeting industry and business needs will go a long way, Lynn.
I wanted to move on to talking about something that's often a tricky thing to discuss, which is the race-based allocations. An 11.4 billion ringgit allocation was announced for Bumiputra empowerment, and this is always contrasted against the smaller allocations for other ethnic communities. How do you view this issue?
Yeah, another good question, Lynn. The 2022 budget ensures that the Bumiputra empowerment agenda continues to be given priority in the efforts of Malaysia to bridge the racial gap. And I would say that the focus is to bridge the racial gap. And he says, untuk merapatkan jurang antara kaum, if I'm not mistaken, the word used in budget speech, right? And you're right, $11.4 billion was allocated to implement various programs under the umbrella of Bumiputra development. And again, the purpose is for education and capacity building. So again, it is to equip the Bon Putra with the right skill sets under those various programs. And again, I would say then that the allocation and the plan is just as good as the execution of it. The execution of it is very important as we cannot continue to have larger and larger allocation each year. We should also measure the outcome and what are the results that we are able to achieve from this allocation. And out of that, 6.6 million is allocated for most of it is allocated for educational purpose to Bumi Putra institutions such as MARA, UITM, in the effort to produce more Bumi Putra professionals in medicine, engineering and finance. So again, I would say, is there a measurement to that? You know, are we getting there? Are we getting the numbers or the target that we have actually put in? And we are talking about this today now at the early days of budget 2022. But as we read budget 2023, can we reflect back and see whether we've met whatever intended outcome that we have actually put in out of this 11.4 billion. And also the rest, about 4.8 billion, is set aside for capacity building and funding programs under PUNB, Tekun, and all the other agencies to increase or to enable various capacity building and skill development.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because if we look back at previous budgets then, have race-based allocations been proven to be useful or well executed?
Another good question, Lynn, in this evening, post-budget 2022 announcement. Yes, there has been announcements and allocation to various ethnic groups. Yeah, and I made a comparison. There has been an increase for each ethnic group. Yeah, and I look at, for example, Bumi Putra, it was 11.1 and 11.1 in budget 2021, and now it's 11.4 billion in budget 2022. And I do not want to run through numbers and bore the listeners out there. But, you know, Lynn, you mentioned 200 million for Chinese ethnic group, and that was 177 million in the past budget 2021. And singles, increase of 45% from 100 million to 145 million for Indian and Orang Asli. 73% increase from 158 million to 174 million. So yes, there has been allocation, and the allocation has been increasing, and proportionately the increase has also gone in higher on the other ethnic group, although of course perhaps the absolute amount is lesser. And if I can read very quickly, like for Indian, the allocation is for socioeconomic environment empowerment of the Indian community under the Mission Indian Transformation Unit. And funding under Indian Community Entrepreneur. Again, it's for entrepreneurs and to support them under Tekun. And like for Orang Asli to implement, among others, the Orang Asli Standard Living Improvement Program. And this includes subsidies and social welfare assistance, as well as for schools, for students, where the students will receive subsistence rate of 4 ringgit per day. Then again, I would say then that again, the allocation and the plan is just as good as the execution and implementation. And there's a need, Lynn, to reflect on this at the end, or maybe not at the end, maybe perhaps I'm thinking out loud now, perhaps in every quarter, where are we now? Should we reflect back and see what is the outcome that we have achieved based on the proposals or the allocation that's actually been put forward?
We just have about a minute and a half left with you, Farah. Which initiatives do you see as being most crucial to ensuring that all Malaysians are included in the rebuilding of the economy?
I would say businesses in general. We read a lot that many businesses are impacted severely. The second round of MCO really put businesses in a very hard situation. And, you know, and why I'm saying businesses is because when businesses don't do well, they will have to lay off people. They will not be able to pay salary to the people, and they will not be able to provide the trainings. They may cut costs on trainings that they normally give to the people. So I think the initiative on businesses is key and it's very important, and good measurement to see where things are for the businesses, and the trickling effect will go down to the people itself. And also the other bit is the focus on SMEs, focusing on economic recovery for the entire country. the funding that's given to SMEs, financing as well. And the other bit, although it wasn't mentioned much in the budget, is I would think that there should be emphasis on skills, upskilling or reskilling of people. But I suppose that's all embedded in the ethnic base allocation under TEKUN, under the various agencies. But one thing that I would like to mention is that there hasn't been much attention given on making Malaysia competitive around the region. Perhaps what are we thinking about in terms of attracting foreign direct investments? Because we know then that by having FDIs, there will be exchange of knowledge, technology, increase in R&D, research and development capability, etc. And that will go back to the people. Yep.
Farah, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Lynn.
That was Farah Rosli, Malaysia Tax Market Leader at Ernst & Young, talking to us about the Keluarga Malaysia theme in Budget 2022. Let us know, what did you make of the budget? Does it live up to the theme of Keluarga Malaysia? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Stay tuned to BFM's Budget 2022 special, brought to you by Ma Sing.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to the Inside Story with Lynn. Today it is our post-budget 2022 show, in which we're looking at the budget itself through the lens of Keluarga Malaysia, one of its, if not its central themes, as well as the issue of sustainability. So we've been asking you, what did you make of Budget 2022? And essentially, does it live up to the Keluarga Malaysia theme in your opinion? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we get to the sustainability angle that we're going to explore, just a look at some of the messages that we're getting. So Lam says, many of us are treated like neglected stepchildren in the 2022 budget. What Keluarga Malaysia is the PM referring to? I feel left out. And I recognize that emotion. I did, however, want to say, though, specifically on that point about neglected stepchildren, I sometimes think that we find it hard to see where we figure in the budget, because it is such a huge document and because it pours out, right? Like, you have to identify yourself, where you fit in terms of income levels, what you qualify for and under what provision. And I think that in that sense, at least when it comes to the breakdowns post-delivery, when it comes to the tools that can be used to communicate to people, perhaps we could be doing a better job in that area. Perhaps the ministry could look into ways to make the budget more relatable or more immediately understandable to people, so we understand where we figure in. Having said that, feeling left out is a separate emotion that I understand. I think that that's definitely where what we were getting at with the idea of the theme itself. We also have, separately, Abraham saying, my thoughts on prosperity tax is that it may not be a bad idea. An interesting point, one that was raised in the tabling. In the short term, it may not be well received by the stock market or dividend investors, but the tax may encourage indirectly more corporate investment into human resources, automation, and so on, which is such an interesting point. Again, keep those thoughts coming, whether you want to talk about the budget as a whole or Keluarga Malaysia specifically, let us know. That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now looking at what we plan to cover in the second half of our show, right? So sustainability was a big theme in the lead up to the budget. It was something that was talked about a whole lot. And now that it's been announced, we can look at what it actually has. So some interesting initiatives. For starters, in an effort to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050, the government is going to exempt import duties, excise duties and sales tax for EVs, electric vehicles. There was also a mention under the second initiative of the sustainability agenda that 450 million ringgit will be allocated to various ministries to implement environmental and biodiversity initiatives, including conservation, Empowering local communities, army veterans, orang asli, tree planting campaigns, supporting grants for relevant environmental organizations. There's also talk of encouraging micro, small and medium enterprise businesses to go green. So there's going to be a 1 billion ringgit low carbon transition facility introduced by Bank Negara, and 70 million ringgit will be allocated to the ecological fiscal transfer to preserve biodiversity to all states annually. So those are just some of what the budget has introduced. There have also, however, been some criticisms. For example, Andrew Sebastian, of the founder of Ecotourism and Conservation Society of Malaysia, says that there are gaps in terms of boosting the country's efforts to preserve natural heritage and developing ecotourism products, which is an interesting point of view. I think because of the green through business focus that the budget appears to have. So that's something that we're going to be diving into. Send your thoughts our way. Joining us now, though, to discuss this is Dr. Hezri Adnan, Executive Director of the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. Dr. Hezri, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
So to start off, what were your thoughts on what Budget 2022 offered in terms of sustainability?
Well, I guess on paper, it looks very good, actually. It sends the right signal to the market that we are willing to change, for a greener path or greener development trajectory. But of course, the challenge would be in the implementation. So in terms of the numbers committed to some of the areas, for instance, the ecological fiscal transfer, for instance, if it's 700 million, so each state will get a substantial amount for nature conservation and for biodiversity protection. So it looks so good, but of course I have some questions regarding how do you actually disburse this fund, and whether this fund will be going straight into the state coffer, or will there be a specific platform for it to be tapped from? So there are questions on implementation, but of course, in general, it sounds so good, actually.
And how does the budget compare to previous years when it comes to having specific initiatives to target climate change?
Of course, being the year or the time when the Glasgow COP, Conference of Parties meeting, is going, I think our recent commitment to upgrade our reduction of carbon intensity is very welcoming. And of course, the one item that really stands out is which we have mentioned, the levy or carbon electric car that you mentioned. There's some incentive there for people to move or to purchase electric cars. And I think this is something which has been, when I was in Langkawi, for instance, heading the Langkawi Development Authority, I said to the government, if you can relax the tax, excise duty and import duty for the cars, I think there will be more people interested to move into this or to purchase electric cars. And this incentive, I think, will encourage people to move into greener lifestyle.
So that carbon tax is part of a larger goal of achieving carbon neutrality by 2050. Could you help us unpack what that means and what it would actually entail in practice?
There's a lot of jargons being thrown around,
Yes.
All kinds of things. But basically, when you say that carbon neutrality actually refers to the balance between, what carbon or the level of carbon that we emit and the level of carbon that we absorb. And I think Malaysia being a biodiverse country with this huge forest track, over 50% of Malaysia is still under forested area. So there is an opportunity to absorb that carbon that we release. So, it's really balancing what we release and what we absorb back from the atmosphere.
And so, therefore, which initiatives in the budget line up with this commitment? And would you say that it is doable?
Of course, some people are saying that it may sound a bit too ambitious for us to achieve. But even earlier on in 2009, we committed to a 40% reduction in carbon intensity. And many people were saying that, that's just too high, But somehow by 2011, we managed to reach about 33% reduction. But of course, people would say how the calculation would be contentious to some people, but it is possible, I think. But of course, you need to move into more ambitious initiatives to enable this to happen. And in Malaysia, I think one, apart from electric car, which is a small portion, the government is really seriously looking into the prospect of, you know, embracing hydrogen economy.
I wanted to look at this figure here because the Financial Times reported that Malaysia's carbon emissions per capita is 7.2, higher than China, who are the world's largest emitters. So while we're talking about this issue, are there more drastic policies that are needed to make a successful transition? What might that look like?
It's always been the contentious point here because our per capita emission is very high because our dependency on oil and gas, you know, on carbon, particularly on coal, to electrify our power sector. And so moving forward will require some drastic changes in addressing the power sector in particular and also the transportation sector. And this is where I think the recent ambition of the government to move into green hydrogen or hydrogen economy is something that should be encouraged. We have the state government of Sarawak, for instance, is already, you know, a couple of buses are already riding on hydrogen. And I think they are trying to rival Brunei in terms of exporting green hydrogen to other countries. So this will enable the hard to decarbonize sector like the transportation sector and also the oil and gas sector and also the power sector to become greener. So these are the kind of things that the government should put serious efforts into implementation in years to come.
On the line with us today, Hezri Adnan, Executive Director of the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, talking to us really about Budget 2022 and what it offers in terms of sustainability. After this, we look at what it has in store in terms of our ecosystems, our natural heritage. In the meantime, if you have thoughts, send them our way. That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Stay tuned to BFM's Budget 2022 special, brought to you by Ma Sing.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
It is 6:50 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. Today we are focusing on Budget 2022. After it's been announced, looking at it earlier through the lens of Keluarga Malaysia and now sustainability. So talking about that with us is Dr. Hezri Adnan, Executive Director of MIER, the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. Again, if you have thoughts, send them our way. If you have questions, ditto. So Dr. Hezri, thanks for staying on the line with us. Now, if we look at protection and conservation, were there meaningful allocations for the protection and conservation of our natural existing ecosystems?
There is this item on ecological fiscal transfer for biodiversity conservation, which amounts to about 70 million ringgit. And this is a substantial amount, you know, if you divide it to all the states, because this is an annual commitment of 70 million. So each state will be getting a quite substantial amount. But the challenge is the how do you disburse this fund? You know, what the last thing that we want is for these funds to go straight into the state coffer, which does not distinguish whether this is for development or for mining or for the development of conservation in each particular state. As of now, I think they started experimenting with this ecological fiscal transfer in 2019, and a mechanism has not been spelled out, you know, when, how this could be disbursed to the states. So I think this has to be done immediately to benefit the biodiversity protection. And also, you know, we have a lot of state parks and marine parks. This is the fund that should be tapped by these parks managers.
I'm sorry, this is just something that I didn't know. So when it comes to funds being put into state coffers, there's no way for them to, for example, be earmarked for specific purposes?
Not really. It's the same with in the past, we have cess money from the logging activities. And the cess money is collected and it will go to the state coffer and it can be used for any purposes, you know, defined by the needs of the state government. So this is not very helpful. In fact, even for the cess fund for forestry that has been in existence for a long time, this actually should be used for, or has been earmarked to be used for silvicultural practices. That means to, you know, to breed new timber species and all that. But that has not happened, actually. So I think an immediate and urgent action on by the government to really specify how do you use this fund for conservation purposes should be made. Otherwise, you know, it can go to all kinds of uses.
So there have also been criticisms that the budget falls short in addressing, you know, these efforts, right, to boost the country's preservation of natural heritage and development of ecotourism products specifically. What do you make of this?
There is a mention on this, actually, in one of the items on the empowerment of the ecotourism sector towards local empowerment and all that. Yeah, so this is about 15 million. So I can understand if people are not very happy. The amount is small, and you have a big segment, particularly you know, community groups that are or local ecotourism spots that are governed by or managed by local people who've been affected by the lockdown. And 15 million is a small number. But having said that, there's also a bigger tourism fund, I think. I think that can be tapped, that can be used for the same purpose. I think there needs to be a kind of a conversation on, you know, broadening that use to also benefit ecotourism. Even though there is an allocation of 15 million for this, it's too small. I would agree with that, yes.
How does it actually benefit our economy to have sustainable initiatives in Budget 2022 or in budgets as a whole?
If you look at the fiscal outlook, you know, the budget would come with a fiscal outlook or tinjauan fiscal, and you can see the ambition of the government. So what is being announced as, you know, in dollars and cents is one thing, but you can also tell what the government is thinking, what are the items in the pipeline from the fiscal outlook. And it actually looks very encouraging, you know, and this is where we are sending the right signal to the market that the Malaysia is willing to move into a greener path. And with a greener path, they will come, you know, we can begin to talk to investors out there to come and invest in Malaysia. You know? So we have a competitive advantage in that sense. We are a biodiversity, you know, a mega diverse country, and we have a rich natural resources endowment. So it's just a matter of us getting our act together. And of course, having said that, I would also have to add that we still have a big capacity issue at the state and local level. So even though what the Putrajaya folks are saying are very encouraging, a lot of effort needs to be done, you know, a lot of road shows and you know, sort of socialization of this budget agenda should be, you know, really widely communicated to the broader, you know, fraternity in government so that they can understand what Putrajaya, the aspiration in Putrajaya. So there is this that issue of capacity really at the local level and the state level, of course.
When it comes to FDI, is this something that companies and governments abroad are looking for, this focus on sustainability in when it comes to policy and the like?
It is very fashionable now, Lynn, to talk about sustainability. If I can share a personal trivia, I left the scene 2 years ago, and for 20 years, we will be bumping into the same people in the environment and sustainable development fraternity, you know. But since I rejoined a few months back, I'm very surprised at the level of energy that we see in the private sector, in the civil society. So there is a new kind of energy level that's driving this. And the same can be said about, you know, with the investors out there. They're looking at possibilities of moving to a greener pathway. And the shareholders of these big companies are also expecting them to be, you know, to be behaving in a greener way as well.
Dr. Hezri, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, everyone.
That was Dr. Hezri Adnan, Executive Director of MAIA, the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, talking about the sustainability initiatives that exist within Budget 2022. Now, we've been asking you for your thoughts on the budget, whether it's on sustainability or whether it's on what we covered in the first part of the show, which is Keluarga Malaysia. Basically, does it live up on both fronts? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, as you'd expect, I think the race-based allocations every year get quite a bit of attention. And this year, in terms of the messages we're getting, it's no different. So Jessica says, Every year, allocations have always been in the hundreds of millions and double-digit billions for the Bumiputra community, while others don't get as much, you know. So Keluarga Malaysia, One Malaysia, it feels like rhetoric. And I think that, just to say, Yap also says, this policy has been included in the annual budget for more than two decades. Why has it not been effective? Why is it still needed? And I think this goes back to what we covered with our first guest earlier, Farah Rosli, in talking about, in general, when we think about the budget, I think assessing the use of it, assessing its efficacy is so, so important. And when it comes to this issue of the allocations and the understanding of it, I think beyond the sheer brute force of population ratios and, you know, being bonked over the head with that, understanding exactly why, where it goes, how it works, will go a long way towards easing some of these questions that we, I don't know, that we keep coming up and coming up against year on year. We also have Patrick saying, you know, the Keluarga Malaysia concept being worked into the budget, which has been in work for months before the slogan itself was born, says perhaps that the slogan is not very deep, or how the concept is something our administration has been working so hard on with or without a slogan. And I think that just speaks to how we feel about, we might just be tired out, I think, by the Keluarga Malaysia, Satu Malaysia kind of vibes that the government's been putting out over the years. But I mean, either way, let us know. We've been talking about Budget 2022. If you'd like to share questions or thoughts, that number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after the 7 o'clock news. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
This BFM Budget 2022 special was brought to you by Ma Sing. Reinvent spaces. Enhance life.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.